Chapter 28. We frolic while 'tis May. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it has now to be realized that nearly three quarters of a year have passed away. In place of the autumnal scenery which formed a setting to the previous enactments, we have the culminating blooms of summer in the year following. Stephen is in India, slaving away at an office in Bombay, occasionally going up the country on professional errands, and wondering why people who had been there longer than he complained so much of the effect of the climate upon their constitutions. Never had a young man a finer start than seemed now to present itself to Stephen. It was just in that exceptional heyday of prosperity which shone over Bombay some few years ago that he arrived on the scene. Building and engineering partook of the general impetus. Speculation moved with an accelerated velocity every successive day, the only disagreeable contingency connected with it being the possibility of a collapse. Elfright had never told her father of the 4-and-20 hours escapade with Stephen, nor had it, to her knowledge, come to his ears by any other route. It was a secret trouble and grief to the girl for a short time, and Stephen's departure was another ingredient in her sorrow. But Elfright possessed special facilities for getting rid of trouble after a decent interval. Whilst a slow nature was imbibing a misfortune little by little, as he had swallowed the whole agony of it at a draught, and was brightening again. She could slough off a sadness, and replace it by a hope as easily as a lizard renews a diseased limb. And two such excellent distractions had presented themselves. One was bringing out the romance, and looking for notices in the papers, which, though they had been significantly short so far, had served to divert her thoughts. The other was migrating from the vicarage to the more commodious old house of Mrs. Swankert's, overlooking the same valley. Mr. Swankert at first disliked the idea of being transplanted to feminine soil, but the obvious advantages of such an accession of dignity reconciled him to the change. So there was a radical move, apostrophe the two ladies staying at Torquay as had been arranged, the vicar going to and fro. Mrs. Swankert considerably enlarged Elfright's ideas in an aristocratic direction, and she began to forgive her father for his politic marriage. Certainly, in a worldly sense, a handsome face at 43 had never served a man in better stead. The new house at Kensington was ready, and they were all in town. The Hyde Park shrubs had been transplanted as usual, the chairs ranked in line, the grass edgings trimmed, the roads made to look as if they were suffering from a heavy thunderstorm. Carriages had been called for by the easeful, horses by the brisk, and the drive and row were again the groove of gaiety for an hour. We gaze upon the spectacle, at 6 o'clock on this midsummer afternoon, in a melon frame atmosphere, and beneath a violet sky. The Swankert equipage formed one in the stream. Mrs. Swankert was a talker of the incisive kind, which her low musical voice, the only beautiful point in the old woman, prevented from being wearisome. Now, apostrophe, she said to Elfright, who, like Aeneas at Carthage, was full of admiration for the brilliant scene, you will find that our companionless state will give us, as it does everybody, an extraordinary power in reading the features of our fellow creatures here. I always am a listener in such places as these, not to the narratives told by my neighbors' tongues, but by their faces, the advantage of which is that whether I am in Row, Boulevard, Rialto, or Prado, they all speak the same language. I may have acquired some skill in this practice through having been an ugly, lonely woman for so many years, with nobody to give me information. A thing you will not consider strange, when the parallel case is borne in mind, how truly people who have no clocks will tell the time of day. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a, that they will, apostrophe, said Mr. Swankert corroboratively. I have known laboring men at Endelstow, and other farms who had framed complete systems of observation for that purpose. By means of shadows, winds, clouds, the movements of sheep and oxen, the singing of birds, the crowing of cocks, and 100 other sights and sounds which people with watches in their pockets never know the existence of. They are able to pronounce within 10 minutes of the hour almost at any required instant. That reminds me of an old story which I'm afraid is too bad to repeat. Here the vicar shook his head and laughed inwardly. Tell it to. Said the ladies. I mustn't quite tell it. That's absurd. Said Mrs. Swankert. It was only about a man who, by the same careful system of observation, was known to deceive persons for more than 2 years into the belief that he kept a barometer by stealth. So exactly did he foretell all changes in the weather by the braying of his ass, and the temper of his wife. Elfride laughed. Exactly, said Mrs. Swankert. And in just the way that those learnt the signs of nature, I have learnt the language of her illegitimate sister artificiality. And the fibbing of eyes, the contempt of nose tips, the indignation of back hair, the laughter of clothes, the cynicism of footsteps, and the various emotions lying in walking stick twirls, hat liftings, the elevation of parasols, the carriage of umbrellas, become as ABC to me. Just look at that daughter's sister class of mama in the carriage across there, she continued to Elfride, pointing with merely a turn of her eye. The absorbing self-consciousness of her position, that is shown by her countenance, is most humiliating to a lover of one's country. You would hardly believe, would you, that members of a fashionable world, whose professed zero is far above the highest degree of the humble, could be so ignorant of the elementary instincts of reticence. How? Why, to bear on their faces, as plainly as on a phylactery, the inscription, do, pray, look at the coronet on my panels. Really, Charlotte, said the vicar, you see as much in faces as Mr. Puff saw in Lord Burleigh's nod. Elfride could not but admire the beauty of her fellow countrywomen, especially since herself and her own few acquaintances had always been slightly sunburnt or marked on the back of the hands by a bramble scratch at this time of the year. And what lovely flowers and leaves they wear in their bonnets! She exclaimed. Oh yes, returned Mrs. Swankert. Some of them are even more striking in color than any real ones. Look at that beautiful rose worn by the lady inside the rails. Elegant vine tendrils introduced upon the stem as an improvement upon prickles, and all growing so naturally just over her ear, I say growing advisedly, for the pink of the petals, and the pink of her handsome cheeks, are equally from nature's hand to the eyes of the most casual observer. But praise them a little, they do deserve it. Said generous Elfride. Well, I do. See how the Duchess of waves to and fro in her seat, utilizing the sway of her landa, by looking around only when her head is swung forward, with a passive pride which forbids a resistance to the force of circumstance. Look at the pretty pout on the mouths of that family there, retaining no traces of being arranged beforehand, so well is it done. Look at the demure close of the little fists holding the parasols, the tiny alert thumb, sticking up erect against the ivory stem as knowing as can be, the satin of the parasol invariably matching the complexion of the face beneath it, yet seemingly by an accident, which makes the thing so attractive. There's the red book lying on the opposite seat, bespeaking the vast numbers of their acquaintance. And I particularly admire the aspect of that abundantly daughtered woman on the other side, I mean her look of unconsciousness, that the girls are stared at by the walkers, and above all the look of the girls themselves losing their gaze in the depths of handsome men's eyes without appearing to notice, whether they are observing masculine eyes, or the leaves of the trees. There's praise for you. But I am only jesting, child, you know that. Piff, how warm it is, to be sure. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Swanhurt, as if his mind were a long distance from all he saw. I declare that my watch is so hot, that I can scarcely bear to touch it to see what the time is, and all the world smells like the inside of a hat. Apostrophe apostrophe, how the men stare at you, Elfride. Apostrophe apostrophe said the elder lady. You will kill me quite, I am afraid. Apostrophe apostrophe, kill you? Apostrophe apostrophe, as a diamond kills an opal in the same setting. Apostrophe apostrophe, I have noticed several ladies and gentlemen looking at me, apostrophe said Elfride artlessly, showing her pleasure at being observed. My dear, you mustn't say gentlemen nowadays, apostrophe her stepmother answered in the tones of arch concern that so well became her ugliness. We have handed over gentlemen to the lower middle class, where the word is still, to be heard at tradesmen's balls and provincial tea parties, I believe. It is done with here. Apostrophe, what must I say, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, ladies and men always. Apostrophe, apostrophe, at this moment appeared in the stream of vehicles moving in the contrary direction a chariot presenting in its general surface the rich indigo hue of a midnight sky, the wheels and margins being picked out in delicate lines of ultramarine. The servants' liveries were dark blue coats and silver lace, and breeches of neutral Indian red. The whole concern formed an organic whole, and moved along behind a pair of dark chestnut geldings, who advanced in an indifferently zealous trot, very daintily performed, and occasionally shrugged divers points of their veiny surface, as if they were rather above the business. In this sat a gentleman with no decided characteristics more than that he somewhat resembled a good-natured commercial traveler of the superior class. Beside him was a lady with skim milky eyes and complexion, belonging to the daresting class of women, where that class merges in the sickly, her greatest pleasure being apparently to enjoy nothing. Opposite this pair sat two little girls in white hats and blue feathers. The lady saw Elfride, smiled and bowed, and touched her husband's elbow, who turned and received Elfride's movement of recognition with a gallant elevation of his hat. Then the two children held up their arms to Elfride, and laughed gleefully. Who is that? Apostrophe apostrophe, why, Lord Luxellian, isn't it? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Swanhurt, who with the vicar, had been seated with her back towards them. Yes, apostrophe replied Elfride. He is the one man of those I have seen here whom I consider handsomer than Papa. Apostrophe apostrophe, thank you, dear, apostrophe said Mr. Swanhurt. Yes, but your father is so much older. When Lord Luxellian gets a little further on in life, he won't be half so good-looking as our man. Apostrophe apostrophe, thank you, dear, likewise, apostrophe said Mr. Swanhurt. See, apostrophe exclaimed Elfride, still looking towards them, how those little dears want me. Actually one of them is crying for me to come. Apostrophe apostrophe, we were talking of bracelets just now. Look at Lady Luxellian's, apostrophe said Mrs. Swanhurt, as that baroness lifted up her arm to support one of the children. It is slipping up her arm too large by half. I hate to see daylight between a bracelet and a wrist. I wonder women haven't better taste. Apostrophe apostrophe, it is not on that account, indeed, apostrophe Elfride expostulated. It is that her arm has got thin, poor thing. You cannot think how much he has altered in this last 12 months. Apostrophe apostrophe, the carriages were now nearer together, and there was an exchange of more familiar greetings between the two families. Then the Luxellians crossed over, and drew up under the plane trees, just in the rear of the Swanhurts. Lord Luxellian alighted, and came forward with a musical laugh. It was his attraction as a man. People liked him for those tones, and forgot that he had no talents. Acquaintances remembered Mr. Swanhurt by his manner, they remembered Stephen Smith by his face, Lord Luxellian by his laugh. Mr. Swanhurt made some friendly remarks among others things upon the heat. Yes, apostrophe said Lord Luxellian. We were driving by a furrier's window this afternoon, and the sight filled us all with such a sense of suffocation that we were glad to get away. Ha ha! Apostrophe he turned to Elfride. Miss Swankert, I have hardly seen or spoken to you since your literary feat was made public. I had no idea H.E.L. was taking notes down at Quiet and Delstow, or I should certainly have put myself and friends upon our best behavior. Swankert, why didn't you give me a hint? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Elfright fluttered, blushed, laughed, said it was nothing to speak of, and see, well, I think you were rather unfairly treated by the present, I certainly do. Writing a heavier view like that upon an elegant trifle like the court of Kellion Castle was absurd. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Elfride, opening her eyes. Was I reviewed in the present? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh yes. Didn't you see it? Why, it was 4 or 5 months ago. Apostrophe, no, I never saw it. How sorry I am. What a shame of my publishers. They promised to send me every notice that appeared. Apostrophe, ah, then, I am almost afraid I have been giving you disagreeable information, intentionally withheld out of courtesy. Depend upon it, they thought no good would come of sending it, and so would not pain you unnecessarily. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no, I am indeed glad you have told me, Lord Luxellian. It is quite a mistaken kindness on their part. Is the review so much against me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she inquired tremulously. No, no, not that exactly, though I almost forget its exact purport now. It was merely sharp, you know, ungenerous, I might say. But really my memory does not enable me to speak decidedly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, we'll drive to the present office, and get one directly. Schul. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.